Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Abarca with Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lipson. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus, or as it's formally called, what's it called?
Well, the disease, like you know how they have HIV and AIDS?
Uh-huh.
The disease is called COVID-19, mm-hmm. but the strand, the RNA or DNA that it's made up, the genetic material, is SARS-CoV-19.
All right. So we will be discussing the
SARS-CoV-19, I think it is.
Or is what everyone is calling it right now, coronavirus. Yeah.
Yes, right, coronavirus.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, most of our audience, I think that's how they will relate to it. And we will delve into it and to the specifics and its repercussions and how is it affecting us in society. I want to make a minor correction on last week's episode, where I just want to make a minor correction update on a statement I had said here on What's Left.
And our last week's episode was about
the last week on the topic of the Iowa caucus.
Oh yeah. Right.
I had said that both presidential candidates, Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Senator Bernie Sanders, had a delegate count of 14. Pete Buttigieg did, but Sanders did not. And he had, as I had initially said in that episode, 12. And now the update is now that Mayor Pete Buttigieg, that name, has 13. And Sanders continues to have 12, even though Sanders won the popular vote on both the initial and final alignments. So that's my minor correction. I didn't want to edit a lot, so I saved us from that. So we must now carry on. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo.
I have to.
For giving me Iowa caucus flashbacks.
Well, it's very important here on What's Left, for at least myself, I'll speak for myself, to correct statements, or if I'm going to retract something, to at least come out and say it.
Yes.
And I think that gives confidence for at least some of the people that listen to us.
Right.
And they have confidence that I know, that they know, that I will make that correction.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for indulging me, Andy.
All right.
So, please check out the video for our listeners, because there are going to be actual images for this episode. I think some of the things that you have talked about is going to be very challenging to explain just through audio. You have to actually look at some of these amazing images to sort of get a visual understanding. The coronavirus, we're going to be discussing it. Let's give some quick overview, yes?
Okay.
I think this was something that... No, I don't think. I know for a fact, in the 31st of December, the coronavirus was being declared as something that was happening in mainland China, specifically Wuhan. There was a whistleblower. You might have his name, Li.
He's dead now.
Yeah, he has now since passed.
Yeah.
And since the 31st of December, there have been revelations, and there have now been about, what was it, 2,000, more than 2,000 people who have died from it, and it has spread to more than, I think, about 6 countries, and they have quarantined Wuhan, China, which has a population of 11 million people, which is more than New York City, and also more people than the number of the population that lives in the country of Greece.
Mm-hmm.
What else can I say about it? Anything else you two want to add to it before we start to get into the details?
Nope. What interests me in this topic really is, like, I ended up giving a little science lesson for my classes, and I would plan to do the same thing here.
Good. So, just to be clear, so it's been about a month and a half since it's come out, right? And the numbers, they've started paying more attention to it?
Yes.
Okay.
There have been, China eventually didn't want to come out and state anything yet,
mm-hmm.
right? And even went after some of the people that were reporting on
early
it on
yeah.
WeChat.
Yeah.
WeChat or WeChat?
I can't remember, but it's well, their Twitter.
Yeah, it's like
Chinese Twitter.
Yeah, their social media that does a lot of things such as banking and buying and selling. Anyhow, it's bigger than Facebook. The point is that they have been going after people who have reported on it on social media, and they were trying to conceal it because of economic reasons. No, they're, people don't want to have the stock exchange or anything trading going on like SARS did for in Canada when they were being affected by it economically.
To create a panic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And even the WHO, World Health Organization, just held back from stating at first it was an epidemic, and now they have just come out and said that it is.
Pandemic.
Pandemic.
Yes.
Epidemic, sorry.
I'm gonna get it.
Pandemic.
Yeah. But,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. But my understanding, I don't know if it's changed, but I was looking at some reports of the WHO, the World Health Organization, mm-hmm. that they also didn't find it necessary to create travel bans and mm-hmm. Closing mm-hmm. borders in trade. So even to this day, I mean, I think that, you know, it raises questions as to, you know, the level of alertness and about this so-called pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you want to talk about what the coronavirus is from maybe a more scientific.
Yeah, I want to give my little spiel about it.
We have our science in residency.
Yeah. So I'm going to
scientist.
I have some pictures that'll. If you're watching on YouTube, then you'll see pictures coming up here. These are the ones that I'm going to use as a reference to talk to Kenny and Eduardo about. And these are ones that I just found that were interesting.
If you're just listening, just know that he just put his reading glasses on to look more professional.
So the first thing to say is that this SARS-2 COVID-19 or what is the disease, the respiratory diseases that you might develop are called COVID-19. The expression of the disease is called COVID-19. Really has been known about since 1960s. It was identified, the first coronavirus was genetically identified and commonly called a flu. Then from that came SARS, the severe acute respiratory syndrome. And that first came in China, and in the case of all of these, these are called, I'll go to here, these are called zoonotic diseases that start in animals and then are transmitted to humans. And animals carry all sorts of diseases, not all of them, or in viruses, not all of them are actually able to be taken up by humans. But if certain mutations happen, or if for whatever reason the animal has one that can go to a human, then the human can get a virus, and then the next thing that has to happen is can that human virus that they just got from an animal, the next question is, can that one be transmitted from a human to a human? And that's the case with all these, SARS, MERS,
HIV,
and, well, yeah, but the method by which they, why this one's spreading so rapidly is a little different than HIV. And all of these, yes, are respiratory, have respiratory effects. So SARS was identified in 2002. And then the next one that came was called MERS, a Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, which was 2012. And then there were a number of deaths in Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Then the one now, which I think is SARS-CoV-2, which is what it's being named. Is the latest one. This one, it was said, started in the Wuhan market, either from a snake or they think from a bat. MERS, back in 2012, came from a camel. That's where all these viruses originated. I think it has been described as a pandemic.
I apologize, I wasn't correct.
Right.
It's not an epidemic.
Right. An epidemic means that it's kind of gotten out of control. And there's belief, even in China, they're talking about now how the numbers are being kept lower. And I don't really know how they decide whether it's going to be an epidemic. But pandemic just means that it's gotten broad geographical spread. And while the number of deaths and the number of, most of the cases are still confined largely to China, it has spread through other parts of Asia, and it's now spreading to other parts of the world. And the big The big real worry is whether or not this spreads to a region or country that doesn't have a very good healthcare system, poorer countries and things like that. So again, and you all should just stop me when there's any questions.
Should we, can I make a comment on what you had said?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you had just said that this comment about how there is a concern that this might spread to low resourceful countries. And I think when we judge other countries where these outbreaks happen, we tend to look at race and we don't look at the reasons behind that to be low resources, because during the Ebola outbreak, all of the Americans there during that period of time survived the Ebola and not the West Africans. And 11,000 people died of the West Africans. But why didn't the US Americans die? Well, because they had had proper treatment and vaccines and were able to survive this period. I might say a number on next week's episode, if I'm wrong, all of them died, all of them survived, all of the US Americans, but the majority of them that did have it, they survived. So you can clearly see that even the people who might be around these sorts of outbreaks tend to be surviving.
Right.
And so I just wanted to point that out, because you said that there is this low resourceful countries that might have more more suffering for it.
And I mean, that does in some ways jake with the mortality rate for SARS and MERS and this recent one, the SARS-CoV-2. I guess I'm just going to say COVID-19. That's easier, even though that's the disease. I'm going to say COVID-19.
Yeah.
Because the mortality rate for SARS is 10%. That was back in 2002. 10% of the people who got it would die.
2002 or 2003?
2002 or 2003, one of those, right?
I thought it was 2003.
And MERS was a 35% mortality rate. But again, that occurred in some of the countries that I think do, where the resources for healthcare are less. And Ebola has a 50% mortality rate, right? But you're saying that people who might have contracted Ebola but actually had resources to healthcare, they suddenly they're 100% survival. So I do think those numbers about what the mortality rate is not just about the aggressiveness and the ability of the virus to kill you, but it also is an indication of the healthcare system that is in operation in those regions. Mm-hmm. Now, the one we're dealing with, COVID-19, is estimated at about a 2% mortality rate. But the difference between it is that it seems to be much more contagious than the MERS that came before it, or SARS that came in 2003. That also seems to have been, might be due to also the point in time when it came about, because it happened right at the Chinese Lunar New Year when everyone's traveling. So that might play a role in the contagiousness, although, you know, it might, the virus itself might be more stable and it'd be able to survive outside the body, which is, when you mentioned HIV, which is in the class of the of these kinds of viruses, this virus is called a retrovirus, and HIV is a retrovirus. HIV is very not stable outside the body. That's why you can only contract it through fluids transmitted to people usually having sex or blood to blood, because if that blood gets on a table for HIV and it hangs out there for only a few minutes, the virus breaks apart and is no longer good. That is not believed to be the case with COVID-19. They believe that it can actually survive even on a desk for hours. And there's been some fear about, like, wait, if things are, what if somebody who has COVID-19 touches and makes something in China and then that something goes somewhere else? Currently, the things I've heard is that it doesn't last days on top of something, it lasts hours. So it's going to take days to travel, so the belief is that it's still safe. But they think the most common method of transmission is sneezing, coughing, entering through the mucous membranes, through wet parts of your body.
This particular COVID-19,
yeah.
Did they know about this particular strain? Is it something that it has mutated?
Like, it is new. It's totally new. And in fact, there are no vaccines for it. There have been vaccines developed for SARS. And in fact, what they're currently doing is taking some of the vaccines that have been previously generated for SARS and trying since it's very similar, and seeing if they work on people. But it'll probably, they estimate it'll take up to a year to 18 months to develop a vaccine. Also, some people are being treated with the HIV drugs for this.
Some of the antiviral medication is also like patented by Cuban, what do you call that? It's intellectual property of Cuban doctors, and just to throw it out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but this is a new, we now have a genetic sequence for it. And so that's one of the ways that they're identifying that people actually have SARS-CoV-2. But the other way people are being talked about as having SARS-CoV-2 is if they are from China or in that region and they have symptoms similar, even if they haven't been identified with that genetic marker, they will say, "Oh no, you're coughing, you have a fever, you're having, you know, shortness of breath, some of those symptoms." They will say, "We are claiming that you have COVID-19, even if they don't necessarily know directly from sequencing any of their DNA to see if they have that inside of them, because that's the real indication of whether you have it is do you have that the DNA from that virus inside of you.
There were survivors in 2014 from the deadly Ebola outbreak in West Africa. All of the people that died were West Africans, but there was a group of US Americans that did survive, and that was because of the credit to two things for the chance of survival, which is a strong immune system and proper treatment.
Yeah.
And there were 7 of the 8 US Americans that did survive. And there's a commemoration of 5 years since they were treated, but they did survive. The University of Hospital in Atlanta was tasked with the seemingly impossible challenge of treating and curing patients suffering Ebola, and they did survive. So, but the West Africans did not. Mm. And it says here that the CDC reports that if you're most likely going to come from a country with less resources, that you're not going to survive the outbreak.
Right, yeah. So these numbers, 2% survival, 10% survival, 35% survival, 50% survival, are not independent of poverty and the inequities of capitalism,
yeah.
You know, and its inequitable healthcare system. So these numbers aren't just like, oh, this is how deadly the virus is. This is also an indication of how compromised a country is in terms of its resources and access to healthcare and its nutritional level and how much food it has and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it's saying. And that's important to remember. So this virus, this coronavirus, is part of a category of what's called a retrovirus. And like I said, retrovirus is also like HIV, is a retrovirus as well. And the reason it's called a retrovirus is it doesn't actually have DNA inside of it. It has RNA inside of it. And I'll talk later about what RNA is. RNA is something we all have and we all need. DNA we all have. What this retrovirus is generally it's a strand of RNA, and in this case it's some sort of unique RNA that when they sequence that RNA or when they sequence the DNA that came from that RNA, they see that it looks like a coronavirus, looks like SARS, looks like MERS, but the one that's coming from this snake or this bat, that whatever ultimately produced SARS-CoV-2, this is a unique RNA strand that hasn't been seen before, and now we have to start to create vaccines to it. Well, around that RNA is going to be a set of capsid proteins, and those capsid proteins protect it. And then those capsid proteins in the RNA are stuck inside this big ball here you see. And those surface proteins are also a very, very important part of what makes this thing infectious. Because if you have a zoonotic virus, but the surface proteins on the surface are not recognized by our cells, then this thing can come into you, but it will never infect you. Because those little purple things you see on the surface of the surface proteins, the real trick or the real challenge is when those surface proteins are actually recognized by something on the surface of your cells. If they do recognize those surface proteins, then it's going to take it inside, and then the damage is done. So that's got it. This whatever came from the bat or from this snake, it had something on its surface proteins that human cells are able to recognize and then take in. And so here's how this whole thing works. The process is roughly looks like this. The virus starts here on the left-hand side. It's recognized by a normal cell, all right? And it's recognized by that capsid outside is recognized. And then the the capsid plus the RNA goes inside. That RNA, in a process I'll describe later, gets integrated into your DNA. And then from the DNA, it makes new RNA that replicates the virus itself, which then buds out of the cell and often, and in many cases, can actually destroy the cell. So this is, people are very familiar with people who have HIV, mm-hmm. but don't have any symptoms of AIDS. So those people who have HIV but don't have AIDS, basically they have the DNA that is recognized as HIV, but it hasn't started expressing itself in such a way that it's breaking up cells. It's not actually active in what's called this, it's lytic phase, the phase where it goes from just being in your DNA to like breaking out. When you have AIDS, that's the situation that's going on. Cells are dying and more cells are being infected with this. What causes it to go from the phase of just being in your DNA to, you know, suddenly spreading out like that? We don't actually know why that process happens, but I would guess in the case of SARS-CoV-2 that it's only a few days before it starts going this process, because it takes 2 to 14 days before when you get the thing to start to feel like respiratory effects and things like that. So the amount of time it takes to go from just going into your DNA to expressing itself and destroying cells in your body is a short period of time compared to something like HIV. The normal thing in your cell is you have DNA, and DNA is transcribed and it gets converted into RNA. And then that RNA is read by things called ribosomes, and that makes all your proteins. And the proteins are what do all the machinery of your cell. It does all the metabolism, it breaks down all your sugars, it does all the action. It lets, you know, ions in, it pushes ions out. So really the whole game is your blueprint for your body is in your DNA, but the actions, all the work that's being done is being done by proteins. And RNA is sort of the in-between as DNA is read into RNA, and the RNA is what is read that makes the proteins. And this retrovirus is not DNA, but it's RNA. And the process of going from DNA to RNA is called transcription, and the process of going from DNA to protein is called translation. And the translation happens with these things called ribosomes.
So you're saying then that the virus, since it's RNA, is skipping that step, the transcription step?
It's not skipping it, it's doing something called reverse transcription. We'll get to that, because what's happening is the RNA is being, instead of DNA being transcribed into RNA, the virus has, and this is true with HIV, and I think it's probably true with the coronavirus, but I haven't, it has something called a reverse transcriptase, which once it gets inside your body, and once the capsid releases, the reverse transcriptase turns that RNA into DNA.
Okay.
And it also has a protein called an integrase. And the integrase then goes into the nucleus and takes that piece of newly made DNA and inserts it into your genome. And that's when you would be like, okay, now we can sequence your DNA and see if you have it.
Okay.
Okay. So that's what this is. That's what this one describes. So you start here at the very top with the retrovirus and the capsid. The capsid is recognized by your cell, and in a process called endocytosis, it goes inside, and then the capsid releases. And if you look at those little blue dots and orange dots, one of those is an integrase and one of those is a reverse transcriptase. So the viral RNA will be read by the reverse transcriptase and turned into DNA, that blue stuff right there. And then that DNA, what they call proviral DNA, will be, there's another protein usually that comes along with it called an integrase that integrates it into your DNA. At that point, all you have, you don't really have any symptoms at that point, because all you have is the DNA. You won't get symptoms until that DNA is now read and turned into viral RNA, and the capsid gets made, and the capsid buds off and breaks up your cell. It's at this second half of the stage, the viral and the assembly and the budding, that's when you go from having the DNA in you to maybe feeling sick. Does that make sense? And that would be going from a person who might be identified as having SARS-CoV-2 when they just have the DNA to, oh, now you have COVID-19 because you're sneezing, you're having, it's hard for you to breathe, you're having a tough time getting oxygen to your system, which I'll talk about why that's the case in a second. That will happen in the later stage when this stuff buds off. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And I'm back to your class, huh?
I know, I love it. So these are some of the symptoms of well, this was at the time when they were calling it 2019 ENCOV. You know, people can get fever, chest pains, chills, breathing difficulties. Breathing difficulties is the major one, and pneumonia. Those are the major areas that are killing people. People are dying mostly from pneumonia and the shortness of breath.
What is pneumonia? Or I mean, I have heard of it, but you know.
Pneumonia is normally a bacterial form of, let me go here, of something that creates an acute respiratory distress syndrome. This is what's actually killing people. In the case of COVID-19, this is a virus which is creating this effect. In the case of pneumonia, it's usually a bacteria which is making the very same effect that we're going to talk about. So on the left, for this thing, you'll see healthy bronchi or healthy lungs. And bronchi are like the leaves of a tree that basically your blood that's bound to CO2 that's already used something up goes over your alveoli, and then it exchanges the CO2 for oxygen. Okay, so when you breathe in the oxygen, that oxygen gets put into your blood at the point of your alveoli. And that's how it should normally operate on the left. Well, on the right, what's happened is those things have become inflamed, whether it's due to a virus or whether it's due to a bacterial infection. And in the case of COVID-19, it's because of the virus. And so the alveoli become inflamed, and the walls the walls of the alveoli thicken, and it also fills with fluid. So those alveoli, so that they're not able to exchange oxygen as much. So oxygen, you breathe in the oxygen, but they're not able to go through your alveoli into your bloodstream. And so your blood stays almost, it gets harder and harder for you to actually breathe. And that's why people are being put on respirators, because they're trying to concentrate the oxygen into their body because they're not getting enough oxygen through their normal breathing.
I imagine that further compromises your, you know, the antibodies, right, in the
yes.
system that's supposed to respond to the
yes.
attack.
Yeah, and so this is the primary way people are dying, but you also will, like, everyone who's got this COVID-19 is, many of them are launching an immune response to that problem. That's partly why they're getting a fever and things like that. And most people are getting over it, just like you get over a flu.
Mm-hmm.
But that process of your immune system working hard to fight that does actually make it so that other parts of your body become compromised. Kidneys can get infected and all those sorts of things mm-hmm. when that wouldn't have happened before. And yes, the lack of oxygen that to your body, which is a major part of metabolism and getting energy, is also going to make a person very much compromised, not just in terms of breathing, but in terms of the other parts of living.
Yeah.
And there is, you said the symptoms, some of those symptoms are very similar to a common cold,
yeah.
which is why it's very challenging to see who has it, especially during the season. When most people are just from this winter season, they're trying to come off a cold
right.
or the flu.
Except that you will have a fever, and a lot of people have colds, don't necessarily get a raise in temperature.
Yeah.
I would say that, yeah, it's much more similar to the flu.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And you know, flu. Go ahead.
What is the difference? That's what between the flu and this.
Just the type of pneumonia.
Just the type of virus, because it's also a virus. It's just
yeah.
the type of virus that it is. The flu also has a capsid. Like, in fact, they've identified for all these flus, like, the different types of capsid. I mean, the wall protein, the ones that are on the outer shell, which proteins they actually have. We know a lot more about these flu viruses than we do about this one. So this one is,
okay.
it's in the category of a flu, but it's a type of flu, which is called a coronavirus, that really creates mostly respiratory issues. And flu itself can create respiratory issues, but it can have a whole host of other influenza, you know, that we know of. This one, it's just some of the precautions people are saying. I mean, we're seeing this done in China. People avoiding contact with each other, staying quarantined into their own houses, not even having guests in their house. Don't, you know, go out and walking around with people because you can catch it from other people's, you know, sneezing and coughing and stuff like that. And you can also catch it, it seems like you can catch it from touching. That's why they're saying you got to wash your hands a lot. This is something that Brandy's always telling me as well, is like, when you cough, you've got to do this, and I don't do that, but I'm learning to do it more.
Brandy, The scientist knows it, but does not practice
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But all these things that your mom told you that for me were annoying, these are the things you should be doing. Washing your hands, not touching a bunch of things and then touching your mouth or whatever. Those are all precautions that people need to be taking. Mm-hmm. And I think the last one is just, probably the thing here is just to say that obviously the coronavirus and COVID-19 has been killing people, it's contagious. But it is important to remember that flu is contagious, and the number of deaths from flus between October 1st and February over the last 5 months was 14,000 to 36,000 deaths just from flu. And that's because there's now flu has like a 0.1% death rate, but it's so much more common that in terms of it spreading around. It's not nearly as coronaviruses, SARS, MERS, and the new one are not nearly as common and aren't as ubiquitous. Because if they were, I think you would have a lot more deaths from it.
I had that graphic, by the way, but you stole it. But whatever. No, so that was my...
What point did you want to make by it?
No, I had more of a question, considering that you're talking about the virus.
And that's it for me.
So these numbers that we're showing right now, from October 1st, 2019 to February 8th, 2020, that's just the U.S., right?
Is that true?
We can look that up.
That might be.
That was my question. If that is the case, which we can clarify it.
Yeah.
But then, I hear, what you're saying about the virus, the scientific aspect of it. So to me, it's been a month and a half. And 2,000 people have died. Yes, there is, something to consider that the data may not be fully out there, right? Like the numbers. So, because at least the way I see it being portrayed in media, it is as this, as if it's an epidemic.
Right.
And even I've heard like some governments, even though the World Health Organization has not recommended closing borders or eliminating trade, putting barriers to exchange, among nations.
Yeah.
There has been political choice, by different countries, and by different governments to close their borders.
Right.
To,
Russia.
And same in China too. Like they've contained, right? Like the area of people, mm-hmm. And so
What are you talking about? Because Russia decided not to have any people coming from China.
In general, like even in China, they've quarantined the area, right? Like with the original, or the most...
Wuhan has a population like similar to London, and they've kept people like pretty much at home.
More than New York City.
Oh, okay, right.
More than people who live in the country of Greece, I would say.
Yeah.
So considering that and considering these numbers, that I am pretty sure they're the U.S. alone about the red common flu, there is an estimation, right? It's a big number, 14,000 to 36,000 deaths as a result of the common flu in the U.S. In 4 months?
Four or 5 months.
And so my question is there something to be concerned? Is this being overplayed? To what degree? Obviously, it is something new, so there is, there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
But my concern in terms of how it's being portrayed is that it's creating a lot of panic.
Yeah.
And, we talked earlier, like one of my mother's is suspicious about this because she's saying, why do a lot of these illnesses come from these countries and stuff? And why is China? And she, she suspects her conclusion is that this could be, a targeted attack. We're delving into conspiracy theories.
Targeted attack of who on who?
Someone on China. Or even the Chinese government maybe had a bottle that escaped, because there are investigations. This is, again, another topic. But my point is, the common flu has killed a lot of people in the U.S. alone in this period. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that especially in an area that has such a concentration of people, I have questions about that, the degree of...
The degree to which the level of the contagion and the number of deaths are so small in comparison to what's happening around us all the time.
Yeah.
Not just from car accidents, but literally from another virus, another flu. You're skeptical of like, wait, why is this one, which has killed about 2,000, mostly in China, being talked about such, when we have this one that's actually already killed 14,000, possibly just in the United States.
That's the low number, 40,000,
Yeah, that's the low number. So you're saying that doesn't add up.
No, it does. To me, it doesn't add up. And again, because I find it suspicious when we talk about China, when we talk about other countries.
Yeah.
In the news cycle, you know, there is a purpose. You know, to me, it reinforces the suspicions about the other, you know, in the Chinese. You know, again, my mother herself was telling me that she works in a hotel and, you know, they themselves were wearing masks and like, looking at Chinese people suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, because in the flow of Chinese, visitors to the country has slowed down. Their hotel has slowed down big time.
Yes.
So this has had economic consequences because, again, it's being portrayed as this epidemic almost, you know, now that I understand a little more between epidemic and pandemic.
Yeah.
And there is chaos, there is a lot of anxiety. And so I have questions as to, especially again, the role of the media in this, in that investigating, because I had a hard time learning what I just learned with you from the media. What they talk about is like, you know, quarantine and, you know, in death, and you know, while we again in this country are dying of common flu,
right?
And again, it's mostly probably the most vulnerable, like you know, populations,
right?
You know,
and that is the case with the people who are mostly dying of COVID-19 are tending to be older, already immune compromised, already their system is weaker, so they're not able to, not always the case, but often most of them are elderly, and that's the case of the flu as well.
Yeah, and some, I don't know, another thing that gets played up too is that doctors have died. And I don't know if you have anything, you know, to contribute to that, or you, Eduardo, because it reminds me of, you know, the Ebola, you know, I don't know, was that considered an epidemic?
Yeah, at one point.
Yeah, and that, you know, obviously it creates even more fear, you know, among the population. Obviously, I'm not saying don't take precautions.
Yes.
I'm not saying this doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, don't take the precautions that you're supposed to be taking, you know, in general.
You're wondering how this is being discussed.
Exactly.
Yep.
That, and I think there is complicity in advancing narratives that are just serve the purpose of the, you know, our constant war against China, you know, economic war. And I mean, this is having consequences, you know, in terms of, you know, what they're doing over there. And I just find it suspicious. And I don't know, Eduardo.
Yeah, you're raising, I think, concerns that a lot of people may be questioning in the back of their mind, but don't say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, two points from my understanding. One, that there might be some governmental conspiracy that might
be a political agenda. Yeah.
And two, the way that the media portrays this, no?
Yeah.
So I mean, I have spoken with some friends as well. They think that there is some government or political agenda with this. I'm not going to speak to it myself because, as we had in one episode, Andy and I don't really delve and indulge in a lot of conspiracies myself because I simply don't like to speculate on limited information. But I will give you both the floor if you both are willing to do so. I simply, on what's left, will be considered the one that doesn't.
But
the media, certainly, I wanted to say on your comment on the media, I have seen that there is a huge difference from when I was in France, from here. I was on the 31st of December, and I remember I was still in Europe during this time when there was a declaration of the coronavirus. And I was listening to French media, and at the time, this was differently portrayed the way that it is portrayed here in the USA. And even when I remember when I was in England and during the Ebola outbreak, I remember how much the USA, I would look at the USA media and they just have a lot of scare tactics, it seems like. And the way that in England it was portrayed in the UK, it had a different way of approaching it. So I do feel that it has to do with the way the USA loves to sort of give you that high on scaremongering, mm-hmm. scaring tactics, mm-hmm. ways to make people feel like, oh my gosh, you know, because I mean, look at how all the US American films are made. You know, you have the biggest, some of the best Hollywood scary horror films here, and then you have, you know, people who have sort of created that mm-hmm. way of portraying things mm-hmm. here. So that's my take. I agree with you. I do think that we have to try to take this precautionary steps, but I also think that it's not to hype. I don't like to hypen. Is it hypen?
Yeah.
¿Cómo se dice hypen?
Just hype.
Hype or hypen. hypen. ¿Qué estoy diciendo yo? I don't want to. ¿Cómo se dice?
Just throw it out there. That's what I think. Yeah. But you understand the concept.
I don't want to exagerar la situación. I don't want to overhype the situation.
Okay.
Yeah. But it is serious, no?
Yeah, and I actually agree with your mother, mm-hmm. you know, which I think if people who just want to look at this and take it on its face, I do think they're missing something. Mm-hmm. Now, what the story is, I don't fully know. But the story, what I know for a fact is this is not just this whole notion of, oh my gosh, the media reporting that there's this deadly thing coming around, we should all need to be pretty scared about it. There's something fishy about the way that's being reported. I think there's something fishy about what happened really in China. I think there are some people who believe that the disease itself didn't start. It might have gone in the market, but there's a CDC center. There's a center right near the market, which is actually working with infectious diseases and even had the bat that was, you know, or some of the bats being worked with. So there are people in China, and I've read reports that people think it actually came out of a lab there.
That's what my mom claims.
Yeah, no, but and I think it's not at all odd to think those sorts of things. I think it would be odd to think that the straight story that we're getting of China doing this, of the United States taking these precautions, of the media talking about what a scare this is, I think if we took it just at that face value, we'd be missing something. For a fact, I do believe that the media knows that this is clickbait. This is stuff that they can sell newspapers off and make stories. That, for a fact, I know. And that it's like the Malaysia jetliner when it went mm-hmm. down, and they were going to just over and over and over again. They were like, how do we use this to basically get more and more people watching us? So what can we say to frighten people and then give people information so that they need us to feel safe? The mainstream media also has a lot of work to do because, you know, they lost the thread with Trump when they were trying to beat him, and now they have to go back and try to beat Bernie Sanders or what have you.
Yeah.
So the mainstream media itself is discredited. So one of the ways that you try to build credit is to basically make people think, well, you need me to feel safe.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that's going on. And China is running through a similar thing, controlling the media, controlling what gets said about this, and controlling its own population about don't go out, do go out. That's for the Chinese people to worry about. But I do know that the Chinese people are very upset with their government, and I think they have every reason to be. I, from this side, I am not in support of our government, if it's doing that, of saying restricting, you know, doing things like if Chinese go through the plane, you've got to have a separate little check and things like that. To me, I don't like that. I don't agree with that. You know, and I do believe they're talking about doing that here in the United States, where if you coming from a certain province, then you're going to get this all additional check. I don't like it.
Two cities to the east have now been quarantined in near the Wuhan province.
Yeah, to me is the, you know, again, this point is highlighted that the fundamental result of manipulating information in is the same whether, you know, it's China or here, but and it's also distracts us from, you know, like, oh, look over there. We are better off. It reinforces the idea of American and Western exceptionalism, mm-hmm. and, you know, and the idea that China is so evil, you know, and others are so evil. So, you know, we at least are better off,
right.
You know, and, you know, I don't know.
Well, for a fact, I know one of the stories that came out in the mainstream media was these wet markets that China has, where they have live animals and things like that, that they're that their system of food distribution needs regulation and has got sorts of problems. But like you pointed out, what about the United States?
I was just going to go there.
Right. Yeah. Like the United States has created a whole mad cow disease. It created all sorts of antibiotic resistance by virtue of our things. So we, our own food system has its own problems, and we don't. But we want to look over somebody else's and say, "What the heck is wrong with you?"
Yeah, I think what normally happens. Look, I have lots of people connected with me in Mexico because of my family and friends there back home that are connected with me, and even some friends from just outside of the USA, and they have these memes on WhatsApp that they see, and a lot of these memes are targeting Chinese people right now, and I even have heard people here make jokes about Chinese people, and people oftentimes will say that these things are happening to black folk or Chinese people, or they're happening to other countries. But you have to understand that these things are racist ways of trying to say that these, because I've heard people say, "Oh, it's the Chinese people, careful, watch out," and make memes about it. These are very, you know, very subtle but also overt ways of trying to marginalize people and to discriminate and to say things about people when we don't acknowledge that here in the USA, we've had E. coli kill children. Mm-hmm. We've had mad cow disease. We've had as well I know Latinos usually like to criticize the Chinese, but we have in Latin America Zika, dengue. Mm. I mean, we have had this.
We have flu.
Right, we have the flu. And there was the SARS epidemic as well. That I'm just saying that this is not, well, that it was affecting in China, that came from China. Excuse me, I want to try to say it because what's her name? Hema's always criticizing me. but what I'm trying to say is that there might be some reasons, I think some factors, that the reasons why there are not these epidemics that happen, well, there are epidemics, but don't become pandemics from this, from so-called first world countries. And that is because of the resources that we have as well. Yeah. And they're more controlled. But even now, there are viruses brewing at this moment that we may not be aware of that slowly come and go, and they're slowly also being tempered
when you like tick
like stop.
Oh,
what is hampered or tempered?
I'm not sure.
You two are never helping me with my words. English,
you know,
language,
say, he's trying
Spanish
to say
language.
These viruses that are being stopped or kept down.
Yeah.
You just want this perfect word. I'm sorry. Well, I'm not a thesaurus.
I just wanted to point out that that the USA has had its own history of as well epidemics and outbreaks as well that we need to look at as well. That
I mean,
this is going to happen, and I have some four major reasons why I think they will happen, which I can point to, but you
just a quick point, and also okay. So China is not releasing information. Let's talk about the information of the conditions of people in detention, in the concentration camps. You know, the immigrants. You know, me working in that field, we find out about horrible conditions that are happening in creating, you know, illnesses that can be preventable.
Right.
So and then you know at the same time that we're talking about the coronavirus. You know, another branch of the mainstream media was talking about China repressing the Muslim, population over there. Mm-hmm. When we have this, we're doing the exact same thing here. Mm-hmm. You know, and so again, to me, it's like we have to dispel this like, notion that you know that we are better than they are,
right.
And you know, with that government, like you said, they have their own problems with their own government. We have to focus on ours and fight our government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they are lying to us all the time. They're hiding information. They're treating people horribly all the time, and you know, they're exploiting us too.
Right.
So I mean,
and I think that to me is the part that is the most unsettling, because I don't know exactly what's behind all this, but the contradiction between the level at which this is being reported compared to the numbers that the number of deaths is actually being responsible for compared to actual currently existing viruses that are wiping people out by comparison.
Yeah.
And we look at 14,000 or 36,000 over a 4-month period. Just tell me that there's some other story.
Yeah.
And that to me is the part that we need to be afraid of. is what is that story, and how is this tragedy that's happening in Wuhan being used to fool all of us into being afraid of each other, into trusting our own government, into trusting our own media, because that's ultimately what's being done here. Is they're trying to build solidarity between us as workers against the Chinese, with our own media, with our own ruling class, and thinking that they're there to protect us from these other dirty countries.
And just to point out, though, when you say that the flu has killed, when you both have said this, there have been people who have also survived the flu, yeah, but there have not been anyone who has survived the coronavirus. So I think that is...
There's tons of people surviving. Yeah.
Is there 70,000 infections? Yes. And only like 2,000 have died.
Like the vast majority of people who are getting this coronavirus are actually experiencing mild fever and getting over it. That's like...
But that's not... I mean, it's not recorded as having...
Is it recorded? Yes. It's actually like... That's what these numbers mean. Is they're indicating that it's not like 70,000 are on the verge of dying. No. There are people who've had it, and their immune system is marshaling a response to it, and it's going to defeat it. And that's what's happening to the majority of people. And so this is not... We're not just waiting for 70,000 people to die. It looks like about 2%, and it's believed it's going to be lower, of the people who get it actually are dying from it.
That's the part that makes me suspicious about this whole thing.
Yeah.
That again, it's being overplayed to me. And obviously, it's happening. It exists, but it has been grabbed as a political tool. And you know, obviously, they're not gonna take let the opportunity go. You know, at least our government to drive some narrative that fits into their into their interests.
And just to say that the difference is for the flu's mortality rate seems to be about 0.1%. So that's even, you're much more likely to survive flu than it seems by percentage numbers, the SARS-CoV-2. But the millions of people get the flu, and we don't see those numbers yet here with SARS-CoV-2. So in terms of its ability, its contagiousness, and its ubiquity around the globe, you know,
we have a vaccine for the flu.
We do, but
we don't have a vaccine for this coronavirus.
Correct. And that is going to be in the process of being made. But it's not like even you said, Ebola. When Ebola is talked about as 50% mortality rate, but we already know there's problems with that. It turns out, if you have money and you have nutrition, your numbers get much higher. So that's already, that 50% is suspicious. But here we're talking about within China, within mainland China, within Wuhan district and other regions where this thing is spreading around, most people are getting fevers and getting over it.
And we don't know the full facts of the demographic of people, that those 2,000, you know, why and how they were prone to get that and die from it. You know, it's again, even the numbers in the U.S., if we really look at it, I mean, I think it's a lot of people that have compromised immune systems, you know, like older people or maybe some kids.
That we already know.
You know, so again, it's getting overplayed and it's getting reduced to the sensational aspects, the fear factor. And that's where I have a problem. And again, I'm not saying don't take precautions, you know, do live a healthy life as much as you can.
Do like this when you
cough into your forearm.
Well, what I'm trying to say is I agree with do not sensationalize this, but what I'm saying is this is what I was trying to point out to was that this is a new virus.
Yes.
And yes, flu is there as well as other viruses, but this is a new virus and we still are learning about it.
Yeah.
And so that is the difference between the flu and this one, that we have prior knowledge with the flu, but we don't have this knowledge with this flu. So, with this virus. So even the survival right now, those numbers are quite recent, and we'll see if those numbers dwindle or rise.
Right.
So those numbers are still not as steady. You understand why I was trying to say? So that's why I'm trying to point out this difference. Yeah?
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
It does. And all I can say, though, is it's new viruses are always going to be created, even if we're not talking about a lab creating it. There's natural changes that happen to DNA and mutations and things like that, which mean that if our DNA mutates and if we have viruses in us, then more likely than not, you will see changes in any yes. given virus. So that's yeah. just going to be a natural part of our biology, of our, and I mean our as in terms of biology on Earth, mm-hmm. because DNA and mutations are part of change. So the feature of having to deal with new assaults to us is going to be a constant.
Yes, yes, I agree.
And I think there's another aspect that, you know, it might be a rhetorical question. I don't know if you guys have a thought, but also as we talk about, you know, temperature, global warming, you know, and, you know, viruses maybe being unlocked, you know, we might be exposed to newer things that we don't know. I don't know. If you have any thoughts, that's a...
Yeah, I think part of when people ask me what is probably the reason why this is happening and other viruses are happening, even some of the outbreaks here in the USA, I always go back to at least about these few reasons I want to mention that I think one that's concentrated population growth, because there are, it's not very natural to have like in my own, in my country, in La Ciudad de Mexico, you have millions of people living together in one area and you have all of this land, other parts of Mexico that are just, the population is lower.
Yeah.
And of course you're going to have, when you have that type of population growth in one area, you're going to have more close in contact to each other. Secondly, it's the organization of the infrastructure of how things are. If you have, that's the cities, you know, the way the cities are designed, you have them just completely like how we are compact in New York City or San Francisco and not as spread out, no?
Right.
And then we also have this technology of transportation. You can now, right? I remember reading a book though, by a French author, I think it was The Plague, where people had died slowly, but people here can now travel from one place to another kilometers away.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have so many people now traveling from one place to another, of course you're going to bring stuff on, just like ships were before in the days of the ships when rats came along from mm-hmm. one country to another.
Mm-hmm.
And then as well, we have what you're describing is the rise in temperatures. Mm-hmm. I think viruses, from what I have read, do better suited in warmer climates than they do in colder climates. I mean, new viruses are going to start revealing themselves as some of the ice starts melting from previous ages. And I think that's also something we have to contend to. But also just the organization I was going to talk about, or the transportation, look at two cruise ships that were on the oceans of Asia. There were the, I forget the names of the cruise ships, but you have people concentrated in one cruise ship, and it's like an aquarium. It's not an ocean, do you know?
Right.
You're going to have the spread of all of these viruses or contamination, and I'm never getting on a cruise ship
it happens all the time in cruise ships.
Yes, you know,
there are issues with a lot of people get sick, exposed to things, because again, they're like you said, if it's a fishbowl.
Yeah, you have, and then Cambodia wanted to declare themselves the ones recent. I think a few days ago, mm-hmm. they wanted to claim themselves to be the heroes. So they had people come over, and then everyone boarded off the ship, and then they discovered one other person had a coronavirus. Now they're trying to search for everyone that was on the cruise ship. So, I mean, these factors, I'm just saying, are part of the reasons why, when people ask, why are these outbreaks happening now at an increasing rate? I think we're not doing things as we once did before. Think about the way we grow our food as well, with E. coli. You don't grow lettuce, kilometers of lettuce together, and not expect something to happen mm-hmm. from there, because it's a one monoculture. No, it's not a diverse culture such as in the forest, where you have different foods growing together amongst different plants that help each other out. No,
so again, to jump off from both your points about, you know, these things are natural, they evolve, you know, it's part of being, you know, in the ecosystem, mm-hmm. and so then it becomes about the response to this,
right.
And the ability of, you know, our organized society to respond to these things. And as we've talked, you know, countries with less resources,
right.
are, you know, have higher mortality rates. Mm-hmm. So then it goes back to capitalism. Mm-hmm. You know, let's forget a little bit about like whether this is being weaponized or not, but it's just the response to it. And mm-hmm. In order to change that, we know what we have to do.
Right.
You know, and we gotta take power, because otherwise we can never trust, you know, like a company that's making something for profit to cure something that's curable. Mm-hmm. You know, can you? I mean, like, you know, something that doesn't get talked about the coronavirus much, at least, is that they're using a Cuban antiviral medication for this, right? And, you know, and there's a lot of exchange between Cuba and China. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not glorifying Cuba. It's just the fact that this is what people know about around the world, that the Cuban health system, because focus is on prevention, you know, they don't have a lot of the issues that we have in the U.S., for example. And, you know, they have a higher doctor-to-patient ratio, for example. And that's their biggest export to the world, even though they are embargoed. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, they don't have access to the resources that we do, they're able to do a lot more with a lot less. Mm.
Well, and I would say that what capitalism assures is that there will be massive inequality in terms of feeling the effects of these new viruses that develop, or any sicknesses that develop. And that we're, and that ultimately, though, we're not all going to be safe. That something that would rip through Africa will eventually, some, you know, country in Africa is going to eventually spread and get to other places. And it's not a sustainable situation to have this kind of economic inequality, an inequality in terms of access to resources and healthcare, and what is should be a right, which is healthcare should be a right, not just a right for all people in the United States, but for everyone on the globe. And the only way to ensure our global safety is to make sure everyone has access to that kind of healthcare. And that cannot happen under capitalism. Capitalism will assure that there will be a massive inequality of access to things like healthcare and nutrition. So I think that as long as capitalism is around, we create even more dangers, for ourselves in terms of diseases and sicknesses.
It again reinforces that pyramid of capitalism, right?
Right.
Like the base will suffer more and first.
Right.
And the
like you said, that it is interesting how in the rise of what seems to be an increased rise of nationalism, of borders needing to be shuttered, it is interesting that this story exists to reinforce the notion of protect your borders, keep people out, things like that. And, you know, when it doesn't have really a body count to justify it.
Yeah. And, I mean, to me, it reinforces this this idea that we're all in the same shithole together, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, so it's to our benefit to do something mm-hmm. and fight capitalism. Mm-hmm.
All right. I have nothing to add.
I'm done.
I am good.
Yeah, so that was fun.
Thank you.
Wash your hands.
Yes.
I'm serious. I'm a germaphobe.
I know. That Brandy's telling me to wash my hands a lot more often than I gotta start doing it.
All right. thank you both for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate it.
Yep.
I love joining you both. We will now conclude. I hope that this episode was informative for our listeners and viewers. And lastly, I think that what I really want to state, I was going to state something, was that we shouldn't claim. I wanted to say, maybe I want to make a disclaimer that we are in any way, shape, or form trying to. I don't want people to come away with this video like we're challenging the medical anything. Do you think we should do that, Andy? Because it's talking about medicine and sickness and I don't want anything to come back to us. You can edit this part out if it's not necessary.
Not
I really
sure.
am asking you because
yeah.
some of the videos that
you
watch on YouTube, you want to make a disclaimer that you're not giving health.
Advice or something?
Advice or you should consult a doctor or you shouldn't be also. You know what I mean? Like some of these disclaimers do get made when you make these sorts of videos on YouTube, and I don't know if we should do it.
What do you think? I think we just said, you know, wash your hands, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, ultimately,
because we're talking about not over-sensationalizing this thing, right? I mean, and if people see this and then they might feel like they have symptoms or something, wherever they're watching this, and then they're like, oh, they told us not to over-sensationalize, I don't want it to come back quite as. But if you both think it's not necessary, then we can edit this out.
I mean, to me, it's ultimately about, you still have to do your own investigation and research and don't take things at face value, you know, and, I mean, do take the precautions because, I mean, it doesn't cost you anything, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
But do question the political agenda behind it. That's my point.
But I would say that if I found out that I had SARS-CoV-2, I would not believe that I'm dying. I would believe that, you know, like, okay.
It's not a death sentence.
It's not a death sentence. And you can have a flu and die. You can have things and get bacterial infection and get pneumonia and die. You know,
you had a,
yeah, you know, you can have all sorts of things that come along. So,
I will just say this. It's important that any viewer or listener to listening, watching this, episode, come away with that. We are sharing our personal views on this topic. And if you have any questions regarding your health or anything that you feel that might have influenced you, health-wise, please, disclaimer, check in with your personal physician. I just feel more comfortable.
If you have,
I feel comfortable saying this. Yeah.
No, I get you.
End of the video.
I get you.
When you're talking about things like, when it comes to medical things.
I
know we didn't suggest anything. I'm just saying if they may have felt something.
We suggest you wash your hands. We suggest you cough into your elbow.
Cover your mouth, wash your hands, do all those things.
And if you actually have they said that for people who have wearing a mask won't keep you from getting it, but that's for the people who have COVID-19. They're the ones who need to wear the mask.
So they don't spread it.
So it's when you're sick that you need the mask most.
Anyhow, ideas for topics next week?
You had all sorts of ideas.
I had one.
The debate. Well, and then something else. Oh, the Harvey Weinstein or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, because of the trial, there was going to be a verdict.
I don't know if
we'll see what happens this week.
Well,
maybe?
In general, I think that we haven't even talked about the Me Too movement.
That's true.
That's why I brought it up. And I did say that in the text.
Yes.
So rolling your eyes is not deserved.
I mean,
Harvey Weinstein, I'm not that interested, but the Me Too movement,
I propose some people we can interview, but we'll see.
And we have a possible interview.
I think we should use
a couple, yeah.
Also, there is some stuff that's going on with regards to UESF and trying to move on the thing. I don't know if there's enough for an episode, but there's a bit of an update.
Maybe we could do the interviews that you have in mind, and then we can do.
We have to set it up.
USF.
Okay.
UESF.
Yeah, but I do think coming up with a framework for discussing the Me Too movement, women's rights, sexual assault, those sorts of things. I do think that that's an issue that we should probably try to take up sometime.
And I think I would want to invite someone for that. I don't know. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. This concludes this episode. Please subscribe, rate, review on any of our 5 platforms and iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, BitChute, Google Play and YouTube. Please share and with your family and community. Thank you very much and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Bye.